The Monday after Selection Sunday may just be the busiest day of the college basketball calendar. Brackets in hand, everybody working, everybody sprinting to get everything out. You know, teams getting their prep, getting traveled, writers trying to get stories finished, etc. But you've also got the portal, you've got the carousel, and this year you had quite a bit of controversy tied to, you know, NCAA tournament selection. So it's been a wild day. We're recording now. You know, wanted to record obviously Selection Sunday night, but I had to do Field 68. So apologies if you've been waiting for our thoughts. I'm sure you've seen at least mine on Twitter. I think Brad also even tweeted, which is very rare. But Brad, I first want to say apologies about your Friars. I will say I was locked in Vegas. It was fun. You know, usually I'm just loading up BovadaSportsbook.com to gamble, and you know, I got to go to some sports books and place bets on games. Was betting Providence. You know, I bet Providence against Creighton. It hit. Bet Providence against Marquette. Did not. But such is life. Friars left out in somewhat controversial fashion. But in all, the Big East, the Big Loser, the Mountain West, Big Loser. Really, the basketball-centric conferences screwed on Selection Sunday. How are you in the stages of grief with this thing, Brad?
Well, here's the thing. When we lost to Villanova 2 weeks ago, I accepted, all right, there's going to be no tournament. When we lost to UConn on Saturday, I accepted, okay, there's going to be no tournament. Everything pre the Creighton game, I accepted there's going to be no tournament. And now, I did not look at resumes the entire year. I was looking at the bracket people and in the T-rank. Bracket calculations like daily. I mean, a new bracket person would pop up in my For You of Twitter every day. It's like 30 of them, a new one every single day. I was looking at all of them, but I never actually looked at the resumes until Saturday. There is literally no justification for leaving Providence out. Right? The justification that people were using, the quadrant 1 through 3, was clearly not a thing, which we said all along. Providence had 6 quadrant 1 wins, 0 bad losses, and, you know, I saw Lenardi saying, oh, if you want a team to be in, you got to knock teams out. Yeah, Providence, Seton Hall, and St. John should be in. Florida Atlantic, Virginia, and Michigan State should be out. I mean, you even go to, like, Dayton has no wins against the field. I'll give them one against St. John's, right? Colorado's only win against the field was Washington State. See, oh, okay, but metrics. But then St. John's was 25th in KenPom, and they get left out. And the circular logic that the committee usually uses, this year they couldn't even use the circular logic right. This Charles guy, the head of the committee, I mean, oh, my God, this guy was he was not ready for this at all. He said that Michigan State made the tournament because of their quadrant one wins. That's not even the right circular logic to use, right? Like, this is like, I feel like I'm George Costanza picking the Susan Ross scholarship recipient. The kid's like, my favorite animal is a frog. It's like, no, frog is wrong. Like, quarter one wins for Michigan State is literally the wrong answer. The right answer is like KenPom.
It's, I mean, it was nuts. Like, look. I was immensely frustrated with everything that went down Selection Sunday night, because, as you kind of just said, Brad, like, these people are making literal life-altering decisions. Look, like, you and I are like, yes, Brad, like, you love the Friars, whatever, like, your world is not changed, I mean, by Providence making the tournament. Like, you will still wake up tomorrow, you'll have your job, you'll have your life, you'll just be, like, disappointed a little bit. But, like, Kim English's world changes by making the tournament. Nico Medved's world changes when they get to be the last team in, despite their resume being better than Dayton's, being better than, like, half these teams, right? Like what was done to the Mountain West was disgusting. What was done to the Big East was disgusting. What was done in terms of just, like, general laziness, right? Look, I have tried to push back against Brad's take that we need a formula, we need to automate this. But after this, like, I don't know if I can anymore. Because It is so blatantly obvious that the committee, despite taking way more time, does a lazier, worse job than, like, any bracketologist. Like, I know that the bracketology convention happened in Omaha a couple weeks ago. I don't think that's the official title for it. But, you know, a bunch of these guys just, like, went to Omaha and, like, hung out for the weekend, like, you know, went to a sports bar and, like, picked the bracket. These people would do a far better job. Far better. Like, it is an, I mean, look, ignoring individual teams, it is an outrage that games just simply do not count. That the committee chair can say, well, what happened to Temple, you know, to FAU against Temple? And the committee chair's response is, and I believe this is verbatim, Brad, that, well, FAU was already in at that point.
Yeah, go watch the Matt Norlander interview he did right after the selection show. It's only a good job. I mean, if they had more time, they could have put the screws into Charles and he would have folded. I don't even know what he would have said. But Matt Norlander was like, how is Florida Atlantic an 8? Was that game against Temple considered? And he's like, well, no, we already had locked Florida Atlantic in the bracket, so they were not considered. Right? Like, that's like what he said. Matt's first question was Iowa State versus UNC. He's like, oh, well, we made that decision on Friday. Like, you cannot have a sport where we're deciding the playoffs before the games are over. What the hell's going on? Like, Norlander is asking, like, are you guys equipped to do this process?
Can you imagine, like in the NBA, if you'd be like, like the Lakers lose their final four games of the regular season, they go from, you know, sixth to 10th. But they don't have to go to the play-in tournament because we already decided.
No, they're still sixth.
Yeah, they're still going to be sixth. The last couple games don't count. Like, look, and I don't know how to fix this. I mean, look, I don't see – I understand. So my understanding is that the process is very, like, formal. Like, every team has to be voted into the field and approved and, you know, this, that, the other thing. So I understand that. But, like, the concept that, like I don't see why this can't be done in, like, a day. And if we have to move selection Sunday to selection Monday, that's fine. But like I feel like 28 of the 36 teams are like so blatantly obvious without any debate. Right?
Even more than that. I mean, so now I agree the bid thieves were a challenge.
Oh, no question.
And Gary Parrish made the point in their pod, like these people were not equipped for the bid thieves. Right, because even looking at their first four out, right, that last spot, if there were no bid thieves, was probably between St. John's, Providence, and then who knows, New Mexico, because he said multiple times during his interview, we were not going to have New Mexico in. Like, they're the only Mountain West team that's actually good. Why do you keep saying you're going to leave them out? They would have had a much easier job. It's as the field got smaller and smaller, that tight groupings between like the seven or the eight seeds and the 10 seeds, they just couldn't figure it out.
And the other thing is they make so obvious that they were just like lazy and couldn't figure things out. Right. Like, I mean, number one, I would have objected to VCU being an 11 seed regardless, but like the concept that like Duquesne is the same seed as New Mexico. Duquesne is like 83rd in the net. Like Duquesne was like a bubble NIT team and they get the same seed as New Mexico, who's a top 25 team in like every metric and won like 7 quad one games. Like how stupid, like what are we doing? Like how did we get here? I mean, like, again, like there's so many issues of like logic. And again, the Mountain West thing, like I've said it all on Twitter. So you want to see my whole take, see there. But like, the concept that the committee chair said that it was about what you did in the non-conference for the Mountain West teams, because, you know, of course, the Mountain West teams beating each other doesn't count, even though it counts in every other league. But then Dayton doesn't beat a tournament team in non-conference, they get a 7. Texas doesn't beat a tournament team in the non-conference, they get a 7. TCU doesn't beat a tournament team in the non-conference, they get a 9. Utah State, who was like the one Mountain West team that had bad metrics and, quite frankly, didn't beat anyone in the non-conference. They get an 8 seed, right? Their resume was far worse than Boise's on paper, in my opinion, other than the fact that they just won more Mountain West games. Like, Like again, it's just outrageous. Like, Washington State beat Boise. That's their only win in the non-conference. They play like a 300-plus non-conference schedule. They're a 7 seed. How is Colorado State to beat Creighton, Boston College, Washington, and Colorado a 10? Like, what are we doing?
And I've seen people suggest that, oh, they average the two resume metrics. I don't know about that. The BPI thing is, like, to me, it felt more like they were doing the bracket. They finished. They took a step back and realized, oh, shit, we have six teams from a mid-major conference. We got to do something about this. And then when New Mexico won the tournament, they're like, well, we can't even get one of these teams out.
So they have they just made them the last teams in to, like, prove a point. Yeah.
Right, because, like, I just don't think these people had enough intention, given all their answers to all these questions. And, you know, all the seed, you know, you can point to, oh, it was the average of the resume metrics. But St. Mary's was 40, and they got a 5 seed. And then you're playing, well, oh, no, only the top 36, they took the average. And then for the last 6, they did this. And, oh, they seeded it differently. It's just like your theory's got too many, too much Charlie Day in the corkboard.
Also, we have to assume that these people are idiots. These people are not experts on this.
Well, they're athletic directors, right? They're dealing with, like, the field hockey team, right? I bet they watched more of their school's field hockey games than they did of Mountain West games in total.
It was so entertaining.
Like, not really, because
I mean, yeah, it sucks for you.
So the Big East, right?
I was just saying, the thing I was saying was so entertaining was Richard Pitino sitting in his press conference on Friday night. Richard Pitino said that he thought that Joe Lunardi was, quote, in his jammies right now, not watching the Mountain West, which turned out to be true because Richard Pitino tweeted, Joe Lunardi, excuse me, tweeted that night, going to bed now, bye, which was like the most insane thing that's ever been tweeted, right?
And he put Virginia 1.
Joe, pal, like, I don't mean to let you lie to this. You seem like a nice guy. I don't have any issues with Joe Lunardi, but, like, this is the one time you work all year. Like, this is.
I think he has a desk job, and he's like the voice of the St. Joseph's.
Sure. That's fine. But Brad, like, can you imagine, like, an accountant? You know, accountant. It's like April 14th, and it's 11 p.m. on April 14th, and he's got dozens and dozens of tax documents to get through, but he's like, all right, time for bed. I'll worry about this when I wake up in the morning. What the fuck?
And so Charles went on an interview with a Mad Dog, and Mad Dog asked him the reasons why the three Big East teams were left out. And this is literally what he said. It was not quadrant 1 through quadrant 3. It wasn't strength of record. It wasn't any of this stuff. Ready? It was Providence. He said their road record was bad and their metrics are bad. Well, it's like strength of record was good. Like, better than Michigan State. Their KenPom was mediocre. Virginia's was worse. We can call their KenPom bad. I think their KenPom was like 52 or something. But Virginia was like 69. Providence had 6 quadrant 1 wins, 0 losses. He goes, oh, their road record is bad. Providence went 4-7 on the road, same as Northwestern. Michigan State went 3-7 on the road. Mississippi State went 2-8 on the road. So you go to St. John's. He says, well, St. John's was 1-6 against the top 3 in the Big East, and they didn't have a good non-conference win. Did Virginia beat Duke or UNC? Like, Michigan State had 1 win against the top. Florida Atlantic didn't even have wins in the top of their conference, right? Florida Atlantic lost to UAB in South Florida, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So St. John's has held a higher standard to beat a 1 seed, a 2 seed, and a 3 seed than Florida Atlantic to beat NIT teams?
Well...
And then the cherry on top, I'm sorry to interject, but the Seton Hall one was the worst by far. And they said, well, Seton Hall's best non-conference win was Missouri, which is fair. But then he said, well, the UConn win we have to discredit because Donovan Clingan didn't play in the second half. That is not only ridiculous, it is so specific that they were clearly targeted to be out, right? Like, and they were the one that was closest to being in. So, like, that's something that other athletic directors specifically said about Seton Hall, which is ridiculous. And at the end of the day, I think we can characterize what happened to the Big East as the episode of Curb where Ted Danson's chef is trying out for Larry and Jeff to be the chef at their restaurant.
Yes. Yes.
He's like, how was it? And Larry's like, a little saucy. Like, wait, I'm fired because it was a little saucy? Like, I can put less sauce. Like, no. Nah, I don't think so. We're just not feeling you guys.
The last thing I'll say on this, in general, like, I haven't spent as much time in the Big East as I have on the Mountain West thing because I think the Mountain West ones are, like, more easily visible. Like, I think all the Big East teams did have viable reasons why they should have been, like, at the cut line, right? And it's just a kind of shitty break that the league, you know, didn't get any of them in. But I will say this, like, I think on its face, the idea that, like, the two leagues that had bid stealers, and in both cases, those bid stealers beat the, like, bubble team. Virginia lost to NC State, Oregon lost to Colorado lost to Oregon, excuse me. The idea that, like, neither of those teams get punished for that, they get to stay in, but all the Big East teams get wiped out by the bid stealers, that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, to me, if it's close, the idea that the Big East lost one, maybe two bids from the teams in the ACC and Pac-12 not doing their business, and then the ACC and Pac-12 teams still get rewarded, is crazy. Like, and again, I'm not saying that, like, we should be really tipping the scales. Like, I don't think the committee should sit there and say, well, the Big East is the second conference, so they get six bids. The Mountain West is the sixth best conference, they get four bids, whatever. Like, as we've said on the show, it's an arbitrary cut line, right? The number of bids that a league gets is not necessarily the indicator of how good the league is because, you know, you're trying to be in the top 36, right? If you have 37, 38, and 39, yeah, you've got a bunch of good teams, but you don't have top 36 teams. So that I don't buy. I'm not saying we need to go like that to that extreme, but if it's close, and we could punish the team that lost that week to the team that stole the bid, why don't we do that? Right? There's a very real case that, you know, St. John should be in over Colorado. There's a very real case that Providence or Seton Hall should be in over Virginia. So how did we come up with this? Oh, well, we got to keep, you know, the Pac-12. It just doesn't make any sense. So.
I will say one thing that the Mountain West, I think, benefited from, completely coincidentally, but two of their probably three best teams have, like, dream first-round matchups. Like, Nevada getting Dayton. Like, Dayton is the... Dayton might be worse than Virginia. They're horrible. Nevada's going to wipe the floor with them. If Nevada was what they were supposed to be, what, a six seed? Like, what if they got Oregon? Or, you know, what if they got... I mean, they can't get New Mexico, but, you know, what if they got the play-in winner or something? And then the same goes with New Mexico and Clemson. Clemson's horrible. They're not athletic. New Mexico's going to run them off the floor. This could be Iowa Richmond 2.0, but for me at least, those are two of the easier games to pick in the whole, you know, similar seeded first round.
Yeah. So look, I would say this. I think in general, it's setting up the Mountain West for failure that they get the shitty seeds, right? Like, you know, realistically, some of these matchups are not like San Diego State has played Auburn in the second round. Auburn's a, you know, top five team in the metrics. you're going to play them in the second round. Like, that's kind of brutal as a five seed. You know, I thought that Colorado State and Boise having to win that extra game and Boise having to beat, you know, a top 30 KenPom team is pretty brutal. I do think Nevada matchup's good. I think Utah State's definitely going to lose its first round game. I don't think they have a lot of juice left. And their coach is already at the door. But, yeah, look, I think it's interesting. Like, I will say, like, I know that, you know, Bovada and a lot of the other books, like, New Mexico's favorite on Clemson. And I don't know that's thing, like, I think it really should be about a pick, and I think it's, you know, only going to be 1.5, 2.5 points. But, like, that does say something, right? And I mean, I don't know how much Mountain West tournament you watched, Brad. I'm sure, you know, it was challenging with the late games.
I watched Colorado State. They needed them to win, and they freaking stunk.
Against New Mexico?
Yeah.
I didn't even think they stunk. I just thought New Mexico was just, like, flat out better and more athletic.
I thought they looked like shit. Isaiah Stevens couldn't get anything going. They're bricking open threes. Yep. New Mexico running it down their throat.
Colorado State has not been great the last month. They played outstanding against Nevada. Outstanding against Nevada. Like, great defensively. Nick Clifford and Jalen Lake made shots. Like, realistically, Colorado State's struggles have just been, like, they have a bunch of guys who, like, have stopped making threes all of a sudden. Like, Josiah Strong can't make anything. Jalen Lake couldn't make anything. Nick Clifford had been quiet. And all those guys made shots against Nevada, and then they went back to bricking shots against against New Mexico. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I think one thing that Colorado State said was they played incredibly tight in all those, you know, quad four games they were playing down the stretch. I think they played Air Force twice and San Jose once, where it was like, you know, if it was kind of the opposite reaction to New Mexico. Like, New Mexico's playing Air Force, and they're like, we think we're a lock, you know, we're cruising, and then they just, you know, get beat because they took the opponent, you know, not serious. They didn't take the opponent seriously. And then Colorado State did the opposite, because they're all these, like, you know, cerebral veterans who are all like, you know, if we lose, like, we're going to miss the tournament. Like, you know, we can't lose. And so they played super tight. But then played, I thought, well against Nevada, and then against New Mexico, just kind of, I struggled athletically. I do think the good thing for them athletically is they play Virginia in the play-in game, who is certainly not athletic. Although Ryan Dunn could cause some problems.
I mean, I've watched a lot of Virginia because they've been on the bubble. Ryan Dunn's offense is going to hold him back in the NBA. I mean, he's just not functional on that end of the floor. And just before we get into the games themselves, you know, there's so much that we cannot say with certainty about the selection process, but this is what we can say. Bad losses literally do not matter one iota. That is a sure thing. Conference tournament games do not count. I thought this year, after all the backlash last year, people figured it out, that they would swing the other way and they would count as much as they can. They're never going to count. And for as much as we want and I guess college hockey does do this, where they have this, the formula decide everything. How would the committee remove the committee? Like, who's even making that decision to go to a formula? I don't even know. So I'm not getting my hopes up. Number four, I guess we're on. I see a lot of the Big East coaches and fans now saying, oh, you just got to blow out teams in the non-conference. That is not the right takeaway. It's funny. Zach Brazilier for the St. John's beat writer tweeted something that was essentially just like, well, the Big East should have just won more. I'm like, well, you can say that about literally anything and anybody in any situation, but it's also the solution, right? Is like, yes, you have to run up the score as much as you can to improve your metrics, but you also need the good non-conference wins. And if you schedule the TCU schedule and you don't blow teams out, you're Indiana. Looking yes. around being like, wait a second, we're 10-10 and we're like 100th in the net. Like, what's going on?
I saw an Indiana fan being very angry that Indiana was 70 spots behind Michigan State in the net, which, like, I'm willing to concede is like a pretty, you know, too big difference. But I was like, guys, like, you struggle with Army.
Like, yeah.
Like, why are we defending you?
Get and, out. Like, Shaheen Holloway being like, I didn't know that we had to blow teams out. Like,
Come on, yes you did.
Either yes you did, or this is a bigger problem here, Shaheen, because it's always about blowing people out. And it's easier said than done, right? Ideally, go play at Houston and blow them out. That'll do wonders for your metrics, right?
Well, I mean, I guess UConn would, I mean, Seton Hall would say we beat UConn by like double digits.
But we have to discredit that because we're just not feeling you guys. And then really, like, the Big East, all this could have been solved, right? Because in the top nine, right, the two who had the worst non-conference performance were Seton Hall and Xavier, and they combined for 22 conference wins. If they combined for 12 conference wins, everybody's happy. 7-bid Big East. We all, you know, pat ourselves on the back and go home.
Yeah, Xavier was a real problem. And even, like, Butler didn't really have a resume until they won those two random road games. Like, I guess those individual games didn't hurt, but, like, Butler not being, like, a turd at the bottom of the league did hurt, I thought. Like,
well, they beat Texas Tech at home.
That's true.
They beat Boise State and Penn State on neutral.
It's true.
That's enough juice if they could have just, you know, both Seton Hall may have swept them. And Xavier beat him at least once, if not twice.
Right. The issue, too, is just, again, like, teams came and went, right? Like, Butler at one point was 15-7, 6-5 in the league with road wins at Creighton and Marquette. And you're like, there's no way they get left out. They just got to beat, you know, these teams that they're supposed to beat on their home court. And then they lose, you know, both Marquette and Creighton at home, lost to St. John's at home, you know, didn't win any of the tough roadies, whatever. You know, if they hold on and they get to 12-8, you know, they're a tournament team, right? If
you know, and also really, if UConn goes 16-4 instead of 18-2,
right,
and they lose at Providence and at Butler,
right. Well, and again, whether it was right or not, right, the seeding may have been jacked up, but like one of the reasons the Mountain West did get its 6 bids, one of the main reasons was that everybody beat each other, like
yeah.
San Diego State is the defending national champions. They started 14-2. They beat Stanford, Gonzaga, Cal, Washington, and St. Mary's in the non-conference. But they turned around and handed home wins, which were quad one because of San Diego State's metrics. They handed home wins to New Mexico, Boise, Colorado State, Nevada, Utah State. And then, theoretically, they let Boise clinch their path to the NCAA tournament by getting Boise beating them at home. Like Boise theoretically doesn't get in without winning at San Diego State.
Yeah.
And then, you know, their final act is losing the close conference championship game to New Mexico. Like that's the way you maximize bids. And again, that's why, you know, if we're ranking conferences, like that's why it doesn't mean that Mountain West is better than the Big East because Mountain West got more bids. Mountain West just, it happened to work out nicely. Right. Again, I mean, same thing with the ACC, right? The ACC is a 6-bid league if Virginia Tech and Florida State and, you know, Syracuse and all these teams either win a bunch or lose a bunch. Doesn't do you any good to be 500, right? Like, Syracuse beating each other, like, Syracuse beating Pitt twice knocked Pitt out of the tournament, right? If Pitt beats Syracuse twice, Pitt is 24-9, 14-6 in the league, with a win over Duke on the road, a win at Virginia, a win at Syracuse, like a win over Clemson, like a win at NC State, like boom, done, lock, in.
And it was not Georgetown and DePaul's fault, especially DePaul, because everybody ate against DePaul.
Yes.
Literally everyone raised their metrics. Like even Providence didn't cover the home game, but they won the road game by 38. Like that. Everyone got a boost from DePaul because they beat them so bad. Georgetown, I think, took a little bit out of Xavier. It took a little bit out of Seton Hall, I think, with closer games. Even Providence is a little closer than it should have been. But that wasn't the issue. The issue was, you know, Xavier not, you know, being 65th instead of like 85th was like really the issue in the net. And then just the last thing I wanted to bring up, do we know like what went into this KPI? Because If the committee did do this with intention and rank on resume average, all the Big East KPIs were very low compared to strength of record. It was the inverse of the Mountain West. Do we know what would make that even happen?
I don't totally. I mean, it's very resume driven, right? So no.
But so is strength of record, and they were very different. Like Providence, I think, was 42 in strength of record and like 71 in KPI.
I do think part of it is theoretically KPI has to be based on a rating system of each team's quality, right? Because it's how did you beat or did you not beat good quality teams, not resumes, right? So that's why all the Mountain West strength of records are weak too, is because the BPI input is bad, right? So right. The Mountain West strength of records were better than the Mountain West BPIs, but they still weren't good enough, right? So presumably whatever the input is, and I don't know if that's KenPom or something for the Big East or whatever it is, that input is bad in the KPI for the Big East.
But, and I don't even know, because Villanova had a very low KPI, but they had they had a very high KenPom, right? And so did St. John's. So I don't know, but the Big East has probably benefited from bid collusion over the years more than they've been hurt. But this year it was brutal. I mean, I will go to my grave at St. John's, Seton Hall, and Providence. Definitely deserved it over Virginia, Florida Atlantic, and Michigan State, unless you're making up the metrics that the bracket boys do to impress their buddies. With that, should we move on to the actual bracket itself, or yeah. Do you want my takes from the NIT selection show, which I watch live?
Are they quick?
No.
Okay, we'll save it for.
There are no takes. It was just kind of pathetic that I was waiting around for 9:30 to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of brutal. Few thoughts here. Bracket wise, everyone's picking UConn, right? Like everyone and their brother's picking UConn. Are you rolling with the Huskies, or like where do you come down on this?
They're, and I mean this is not me cracking the atom here, but their hardest game's against Auburn, right? Because Auburn has the size and the athleticism to disrupt them inside. And UConn's not going to be able to kill them on the offensive glass, even with Klingon. And yeah. You know, they've looked incredible hitting threes. I mean, they just erupt kind of like some of those Jay Wright National Championship Villanova teams, where it's just like, oh my God, it's over. Like a blink of an eye. If they get by Auburn, I think they should be good. I mean, Iowa State's great, but I think Iowa State's probably more susceptible to clinging inside than Auburn, you think, right?
So some thoughts here. Number one, if you look at the odds, like, you know, Bovada and whatnot, like, you will see that, like, UConn is basically, like, even money to win the East region. Right, get to the Final Four, which is crazy. You know, to compare, like, in the West, there's no one that's better than, you know, plus 200. You know, even, you know, Houston and Purdue are, like, closer to, like, plus 150. So it's pretty wild that, you know, UConn is such a substantial favorite. I would tend to agree with you that Auburn is the team that can beat them. I think the limitations offensively for Iowa State would be very challenging against UConn, especially because I don't think UConn's really going to turn the ball over. Right, like I think you could disrupt them athletically and whatever. But we saw last year, and again, UConn's a different team. But we saw last year, like, you know, Iowa State tried to muck it up against them in the PK, and it didn't really work. Like there was no path to doing it. Auburn, I think, has the talent and the depth to do it. I would be interested to see a matchup with Illinois. I don't know how Illinois would guard them, like especially with Klingon. But I do think Illinois could cause some issues matchup wise. That UConn hasn't really seen a team like Illinois.
No, is Marquette kind of like Illinois? You think? I mean, they have a traditional point guard, but Kolek has a lot of size. I guess Mitchell and Jones are small though, so maybe not.
I think the ability to get out in transition for Illinois is big. I think the ability to create shots for Damask is something that even like Kolek can't really do, like. Cole's backing you down to post ups, but he's like looking to pass, right? Damask is just straight up scoring one on one. And Oso, you know, Oso can lift, but you have to respect Coleman Hawkins a lot more because as a shooter. Those are my things. But I think Illinois is a brutal road. I mean, Morehead is a real dangerous 14. BYU's, you know, a five that's playing as a six because they can't play on Saturday or Sunday, right? Which is crazy as on its own, right?
Like, but they got Duquesne,
right?
Which I think I'd rather get Duquesne than like UAB.
Probably true. So yeah, like I don't know. I think look, I'll say this. I said this on Field of 68 last night. There's some striking similarities between Auburn and last year's UConn team. Number four team in KenPom entering the tournament. Number four seed in the region of the defending national champion, who is the one seed. Kansas was that last year. You know, UConn obviously this year. Kind of elite performance all year long, but, you know, some uneven play in league play that knocked them down the seed line. I have people questioning, are they legit? Whatever. Depth, right? UConn was, you know, this team that had 8-9 guys who could all play and all plug in, and different guys on different nights, whatever. Front court depth, right? With Broom, you know, and Cardwell, you know, maybe that's the Klingon and or the Klingon and Sanogo duo, right? Like, you know, point guard questions. Right, point guard. I mean, who's the point guard? Is it Donaldson? Is it this? Right, last year, oh, it's Tristan Newton. Good, is it? Right, like Auburn and UConn have been very similar all year. Right, when they're good, they're dominant. Right, I think, you know, UConn had the stretch last year where they, you know, won every game by double figures. Auburn, I believe, still has only won like once or twice all season in games decided by single digits. Like when they win, they're dominant. And if they get hot, right, if they go to Spokane and they go beat the brakes off of these two teams, which is Yale and San Diego State, right? Or Yale and UAB, which I think Auburn will, right? I don't see them losing in that stretch. Like, watch out. Like, they're going to be tough. And again, it's going to be a road game. UConn really gives me hard. But, like, I do think that, like, the smart, like, if you're trying to win your bracket pool, picking UConn's not helping because everyone's going to pick UConn, right? If you want to win your bracket pool, you pick Auburn to beat UConn and you see where the chips fall, right? Because you're going to get a nice boost there. And all these TV people that picked UConn to win the championship, they're going to get no points in the Elite Eight, no points in the Final Four, no points in the Saturday, right? Pick it, see what happens. If you win, you win. If not, whatever. But, like to me, that's like, that was my number one take. I thought UConn got a brutal, brutal draw. Brutal.
I know. If Auburn was in another field, I probably would have put them in the Final Four. If Illinois, maybe. Iowa State, probably not. But, they've been so good recently. Even, like, if you're looking for the kind of mid single digit seeds that could make a run, you'd probably include BYU with their shooting ability and their great metrics from early in the season.
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, individual games, I think BYU is really, really tough matchup, right? Because I think they're very dangerous for the second game of each weekend too. Right. So if I'm Illinois and I have to one day prep BYU, that's brutal.
That is fair. Any concerns with Duquesne against BYU? I mean, I guess the concern is always cold shooting. I haven't seen a ton of Duquesne, to be honest. Sorry, Tristan Freeman. But I know that they have good guards. I know they have the Drame twins. I'm not sure how much the Drame twins play, but they're super athletic. BYU, you'd think athleticism could bother them, but they did very well in the Big 12 this year, so. Any concerns with the Dukes?
Look, I think they have a nice recipe in that they're deep, long, and they have guards who can create offense, and they're hot, right? I mean, this is a team that started 9-8 and has won 15 of their last 18. The A-10 tournament was a grind, right? I mean, this tournament is very difficult to win. You know, talking 8-9 teams that are top 100 teams, I think 6 teams in the NCAA tournament or the NIT, right? So this is not a cakewalk. And they beat good teams to get there, right? They beat VCU, they beat Bonaventure, and they beat Dayton, right? Like, they had to go through some stuff. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they won that game. But I also think that, you know, I picked BYU because I just think BYU is playing well right now. But I do think the matchup's not terrible. Like, I'm curious, like, what the spread is there.
what Bovada would have. I bet it's like, what, minus seven?
Sounds right. Let me look here. See what we get.
I don't know where BYU ended up in the metrics. I know from half of the year they were at like number two.
BYU is minus 9.5.
Oof.
That is a big number.
The Florida Atlantic Northwestern game, a game I thought maybe could have been a play-in game, really caught me off guard when we started the selection show with that. Like, there was no kind of preamble or anything. They went right into the picks, and it was like, boom, Florida Atlantic's an 8 seed playing Northwestern. I think you got to go Northwestern here. Florida Atlantic looks so bad against Temple. They could not stop Temple at all. We know from last year, this is a mid-major roster. They're small. John L. Davis came on down the stretch against Temple, but Golden has a solid game, but the rest of their guards are just very, very blah. Northwestern's a great defensive team. Bowie should have a field day if Hygier Miller had a field day.
Yeah, look, like, I think the thing you worry about with FAU is that they played the best when they played big-time opponents, right? And obviously a lot of that was early in the year. But they brought it. Even, like, the Memphis game, they did bring it, and I thought played really well. So I think I'd be worried about that. And Northwestern, obviously, very banged up.
So Nicholson is out as well?
He was on a scooter during the selection show. So my assumption would be he's not playing. Ty Berry's already out. Bowie's obviously been great, and he's been a guy that can carry a team. But, you know, I will say, like, the one thing Northwestern might be able to do is with – Barnheiser and Martinelli, they have these, like, two bigger combo forwards who, like, can post up and, like, get these, like, creative shots off. And I wonder if against FAU, who's going to play, you know, 6'4" and 6'4" and maybe 6'5" at the 3 and 4, if they're able to just, like, post Martinelli and get some, like, inverted looks that way, especially when, you know, Hunger's in at the 5 and he can space a little bit. Like, to me, that's interesting. I worry about FAU being, you know, fired up, but again, FAU also might have just kind of like rolled over and been done. So I don't think FAU can beat UConn, right? I think the one thing the committee did do is basically be like, yeah, FAU, like you're not going anywhere in this thing. But if they did beat UConn, it'd be a hell of a story.
Yeah. or if Stetson beat UConn, but that
if Stetson beats UConn, like I might have to reevaluate some things in my life.
They already beat Central Florida.
Very comparable.
I mean, that's a very big Central Florida team. But then this is the last two things we haven't touched on, right? Well, I guess we didn't. Yale doesn't have a chance against Auburn, right?
I don't think so.
Danny Wolf's going to get shut down by Cardwell and Broome. I went with the upsets with UAB.
I can see that one.
That was a team I was very high on in the preseason. I had them borderline at large. The talent, you know, the talent never came together. They were in like the 100s for most of the year, but
we didn't talk Drake at all. Drake Washington State.
That's a weird game because Drake, it seems like they were in regardless by their seed.
I mean, that's the other thing that makes zero sense. Like Drake is in regardless, but then Nevada gets sent to Dayton when Drake's best wins are Nevada and Indiana State, who don't get in.
And then Washington State's a really weird team because, you know, they obviously sweep Arizona. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop and them to come back to earth. They play super big with Isaac Jones at the 4, right? Clough at the 5, or Chinyelu. Jalen Wells up to the 2, Jakimovsky up to the 3, and then Miles Rice is like the only ball handler. Kind of like some old Cooley teams from like 10 years ago. But I mean, they looked helpless against Colorado and they, you know, close the year losing to Washington, so they're not really playing their best ball.
If I'm Iowa State, I'm rooting for Washington State so hard. Because, one, you're going to get, like, a super motivated Drake team. It's a rivalry, in-state rivalry game. Two, Drake is, like, kind of a bad matchup for Iowa State. They have ball handlers. They're elite at taking care of the basketball.
Battle-tested. They've been in multiple tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that to me is, like, a real scary one if I'm Iowa State, right? Like, it's basically, you know, obviously there'll be a lot of Iowa State fans, but, like, the Drake fans will be able to travel. It'll be, like, their Super Bowl of all Super Bowls. DeVries is probably the best player on the floor. You know, they take care of the ball. They control the tempo, right? So, like, it's a low possession game. You force Iowa State to make some jump shots. They don't make some jump shots. All of a sudden, like, you know, now you're going home. Like, that is like, extremely, extremely scary to me.
Anything else on the top left? I'm going UConn here. Or are you going Auburn? Or are you going
Auburn? UConn? Yeah, Auburn.
Bottom left, I think UNC is the most vulnerable one seed.
Yeah, I don't think any of the one seeds are that likely to lose in the first two rounds, right? Like, I think almost every year there's usually one that gets bounced. I think the one that's by far the most likely is North Carolina. The only reason that, like, you know, I feel not great about that is that both Mississippi State and Michigan State are very inconsistent.
Mississippi State's very big, though. They're very athletic.
Yeah.
And watching UNC, I really like Cadeau. He makes some really nice, you know, passes, you know, both in the half court and in transition, especially in transition. But the roster, right, it's very dependent on RJ Davis scoring and Ryan hitting shots. And, you know, against NC State, they were kind of flummoxed. And RJ Davis tried to take over, and whoever they put in that fifth spot, whether it was Trimble or Cadeau or even Withers, just couldn't hack it. That was really killing them. And I think Mississippi State, with Tolu Smith inside and Jimmy Bell, you know, maybe they could replicate some of the DJ Burns success. I don't know.
Yeah.
And also, how many ACC teams are as big as Mississippi State?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Louisville was. Louisville's very big.
That's fair.
They're very but Louisville's uncoached.
We didn't pod since that time, but how about Kenny Payne saying, like, why are people getting off the Titanic? That was hilarious.
That's the history of the Titanic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole West is very interesting, right? Because I think Arizona will be the popular pick, right? They could stay out West, whatever. It is hard for me to shake that Arizona versus Oregon game from my brain. Like, I was at that game. It was very ridiculous in terms of, like, Arizona just, like, they got zoned. They looked uncomfortable, and all of a sudden, like, they're down 12. Like, they had no way of stopping the run. Caleb Love's just trying to, like, shoot over the defense, like, has no real, like, no real direction or discipline in what they were doing. And so then they had to take him out and Boswell out. And all of a sudden you're playing, you know, KJ Lewis and Jaden Bradley, and you're trying to come back, right? Like, if they're down and Caleb's not making shots, I think it's going to be a very difficult place to be because they're not going to be able to generate easy offense with Jaden and KJ in the game.
That's fair. I mean, are they susceptible, though, until the Sweet 16? Dayton is Dayton's done. I have no faith in them at all. I mean, they lost immediately in the conference tournament.
Well, in fairness, every A-10 top four seed lost immediately.
But only one was rated as an at-large team, right? Like, everyone else was in, like, the 70s and 80s-ish, right?
Correct.
Dayton's supposed to be in the 20s. They didn't win the league. I mean, it's an unbalanced schedule, but, you know, they're the three seed. Like, I don't think I'd give Duquesne or Loyola or VCU that much of a chance against Arizona either.
No, I wouldn't. No.
And I'm not giving them a chance against Nevada. who I watched a few times down the stretch, rooting to lose. They're kind of weird, right? Where Blackshear is this big point guard that doesn't shoot it. Lucas is this undersized scorer, and then they play like a lot of two bigs with Davidson, who's like really small, but he's like a big. And Himes. It's just kind of a weird group. But they're winning a ton. They play great down the stretch, and I think that they should take Dayton here easily. But again, I don't think that they can match up with Arizona's size.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, like, and then again, if they're not going to lose there, are they going to lose? Like, you better hope that Baylor's there. Right? Because if Baylor's not there, like, Arizona's probably not losing to New Mexico. I'd love for them to lose to New Mexico, but Arizona's just, like, better than New Mexico. Right? They're young. They're fly up and down, guards shoot the ball, and bigs can rebound and score in the post.
Yeah, and similar to my thing on Dayton, like Clemson has no chance against New Mexico. Those two road wins just carried them so far. This is not an athletic team. They play the two bigs. Their guards are not super athletic, especially Gerard. They were going Beadle down the stretch a lot, who's a complete non-shooter. I mean, this is like a NIT caliber team on the sixth seed line, in my opinion.
I'm with you.
I think this is definitely the region that has the most likely path to chaos, right? Like, if I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, like, how is a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 getting to the Final Four as a double-digit seed getting to the Final Four? I think it's probably this region.
I mean, Alabama hasn't been playing well.
Well, yeah, I'm like this bracket is begging me to pick Alabama. Like, if Auburn and Alabama were to change places on the bracket, Auburn would be like the consensus choice here.
Absolutely. I mean, St. Mary's, are you worried about an upset? Like, Grand Canyon is probably a little better than the teams that St. Mary's usually pounds into pounds into dust. But they're not like that far off, right? Right, like St. Mary's, like if you're below like 60th, they're just gonna win by 40 somehow. But Grand Canyon is kind of like 60th ish.
Yeah, like my thing with St. Mary's is like I remember I think I picked VCU over St. Mary's last year. It's like they're just too athletic, whatever. And St. Mary's is able so effectively to like suck the life out of the game that it works. And I think that's the worry I have with GC. Like, I want to pick Grand Canyon outright because I'm like, all right, they're more talented. You know, Grant Foster is probably the most dynamic player on the floor. But then I'm like, all right, like, you just know it's going to be a dog fight. You know it's going to be low scoring. You know it's going to be physical. And, you know, we're going to roll into this. And all of a sudden, you know, it's going to be 50, you know, it's going to be 63-54 with, you know, 4 minutes left in the game. And then they have Mahaney and Marshall Lynch to close it. So I had St. Mary's winning that game. But then, like, St. Mary's, Alabama, like, what a weird stylistic clash. Like, I don't know. And I think Grand Canyon could beat Alabama if Grand Canyon can beat St. Mary's. I'm just not totally sure that they're beating St. Mary's.
Yeah, so I guess the Arizona point here kind of coincides with a larger narrative. How are you feeling about the cursed teams and coaches?
I'm not really not worrying about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I put Arizona in the Final Four. I have Mississippi State versus Arizona in the Elite Eight.
I have Baylor versus North Carolina in the Elite Eight. And I'm with Baylor.
And it's probably going to be New Mexico and Michigan State.
I mean, that'd be very entertaining.
Any way that it goes chalk and we get the Caleb Love Bowl?
That would be very good.
These selection committee fools. Like, how do you not put St. Peter's versus Purdue? Like, what are you even doing?
I think they don't want to be seen as putting their, you know, fingers on the scale.
So instead, we'll watch Purdue play Grambling. Eh, whatever. Ridiculous. I should just be in charge.
You should.
We'll do the formula for the bracket. We'll seed it by some additional wrinkle that I'm sure KenPom will provide for me. Or Torvik. And then I'll move teams for their matchups based on buzz. And it's all solved. Where to next?
Why don't we go to the South region with Houston? This is an interesting one. What are your thoughts on Houston as a potential, you know, first weekend exit team?
I mean, Texas A&M's playing really well.
Right.
But this is exactly what happened with Texas A&M last year. Like they were the Iowa of 2 years ago. Well, last year was Texas A&M. This year could be Texas A&M, could be Wisconsin, right? Could be, you know, any of the Florida's pretty hot. I think Houston can be susceptible, especially now that their depth is being tested and they just got blown the doors off against Iowa State. I think that they can hang with A&M, though. Again, this kind of feels like A&M from last year.
Right? Yeah, I picked Nebraska because it's the exact same thing as what happened with A&M last year. But then I have Houston beating Nebraska. So I don't see how Nebraska would beat Houston.
And I mean, I mean, that was another team that struggled on the road, right? I mean, I guess this is a neutral site, but
I will say, I just saw that I believe Bovada has Houston as something like a 25-point favorite against Longwood, which is like a really, really huge number in the NCAA tournament.
Even for a normal 116 matchup?
I believe, yeah. Like so the other 116s, I guess we don't have two of them. But like UConn versus Stetson is, where is UConn Stetson? This should be Friday.
Top left. Yeah.
UConn versus Stetson, the number is 26. Right? But UConn is like everybody's darling. Longwood's like a top 170 team that won 20 games and whatever. Like Stetson's substantially worse. That's a big number. But I don't know if it's enough. Like I think Houston might win by 35.
Yeah, this is the exact type of game that Houston can really mash there.
Flip this if I'm wrong, but like I don't foresee any of the 116 games being like even marginally close. Like the only one that has any chance is like Montana State or Howard against North Carolina. Like Purdue is going to destroy.
Montana State has Purdue.
Excuse me, yes. Wagner and Howard. Like, if Howard wins, because Wagner's really bad. If Howard wins, there's a world where Howard, like, keeps North Carolina within, like, 15,
I think. I mean, we can't keep having these 116s happen. Like, they never happened for, like, 30, 40 years. Then it happened, what, twice in 3 years?
No, twice in five, because it's 2018 and 2023.
Oh, you're right.
But
we get a lot of 15-2s now, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, the 215 has become an annual thing. Well, not even just the 215 that happened. It's the fact that the 215 has made the Sweet 16 three straight years. Because Oral Roberts, St. Peter's, and Princeton.
Like I was thinking about this earlier. Like, a lot of these hot mid-major coaches turn out to be pretty good. Like, it wasn't just a fluky run. Like, Shaheen's a good coach. Andy Enfield's at least a fine coach. Like, go the Norfolk guy, Anthony Evans, right? That one flamed out. But, like, most of these Cinderella runs, like, Larinaga.
Shaka Smart.
Shaka Smart, yeah, works out
Ash
well.
Stevens, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. I don't necessarily foresee there being, like, a – like, yeah, the 15-2 thing eventually has to stop.
I remember the Arizona Princeton one. I went to dinner. I was like, yeah, I think Arizona's got this under control. And I got back with like 5 minutes left.
Yeah, the other thing that was weird too is like, do you think there's anything to be said for like the fact, because it doesn't feel like in like the 12-5 game you win the next game. It feels as, and the 1-16s obviously haven't been all that competitive, right? If there's something about these 7-10 games where usually those 7-10 teams are just very average and very beatable.
And they're probably looking past it a little bit too, which is kind of crazy. I mean, like, you think the recent ones to fall, right, was Murray State, whose coach was out the door after he beat San Francisco, whose coach was out the door.
Yeah.
Losing to Shaheen. Last year was Missouri, who I'm sure we'll have a lot of Missouri discussions over the next 7 months.
A lot of portal. A lot of portal. Very active.
0-20 Missouri. Who would, or 0-18 rather. Who would have ever expected that? And I was down. I had them 13th in the preseason. But again, it's shocking, right? It's like Florida Gulf Coast started too with they beat Georgetown and then they beat San Diego State. So it's crazy.
I do think that if there is a 2-15 this year, that it's Marquette.
Yeah, but Western Kentucky plays too fast, right? Isn't the whole thing like you can't upset a team playing that fast?
Yes. That is the one hold up. But I will say a few things, right? Western Kentucky has substantial power conference pedigree, right? Like, this is not a team that is like the talent deficit here is not as major as it usually is. Their roster is Dante Allen, who is, you know, obviously Kentucky guy. He did miss, I believe, their last game. Must have gotten hurt against Middle Tennessee. But, you know, theoretically he could be a bigger wing with some history and production. Right? Then you have Brandon Newman, who's basically a starter at Purdue.
Yeah, wow.
And you have Rodney Howard, who is everyone's like, well, I guess we have to take this guy at center. So, like, they have three real high major players. How about this? Their backup point guard, like, kind of bench scorer, is Christian Lander.
Maybe the biggest bust in the history of recruiting rankings.
Well, Christian Lander scored 10, 15, and 11 points in three conference tournament games this past week. So Christian Lander's cooking with gas.
And I will say two observations. Steve Lutz now 3-for-3 in conference tournaments.
Pretty remarkable, right?
I mean, that's, this is variance probably, but it is remarkable. And secondly, we were talking earlier about New Mexico being favored against Clemson, which I'm sure happened more often. But the one I think about the most in this scenario was Kermit Davis, Middle Tennessee, over Richard Pitino, Minnesota, 6'11".
I will say, you know, it was 5'12".
Oh, 5'12", yeah.
Yeah. I will say it was very funny. Someone asked Richard, I think it was Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union Tribune. They asked Richard after the semifinal game, like, what, you know, what's the, you know, from your, you know, your from your career, like, what do you do when you're in, like, a quick turn like this? You know, four games in 72 hours or whatever it is. And, you know, in this case, you know, you're playing super late at night and then playing a championship game the next day in the early afternoon. And Richard was like, you know, to be honest with you guys, I haven't had a lot of experience in championships. It's like, oh, geez, don't leave yourself worry about it. I was happy with Richard. He's good for him. But, the pace thing is tough with Western, but they have a legit dude in the backcourt, Dom McHenry. They have all these high major guys. They're playing well, right? Like, win the conference tournament, score a ton of points, really won big in all their games. I mean, the UTEP game was the only one that was at all close, and they really controlled that from the tip. So I'm sort of interested in that, especially given that Marquette's got the injury stuff. We saw Marquette was vulnerable last year. I'm not picking it, but like, if you want to have one of those kind of wacky picks, I think picking against Marquette in the first round is not the worst plan, because, you know, especially Colorado and Florida, Like, both those teams, I think, have a very good chance of beating Marquette.
I mean, every time I watch Colorado, they looked amazing, except against Oregon on Saturday. That really pissed me off. The thing that Marquette has going for them that people don't realize, and that I didn't realize until I guaranteed that Providence was going to win at Marquette, Marquette's defense is, like, legitimately elite. It's kind of crazy how the perimeter defense. They lose Omax. And
yeah, we were so worried about it.
About their defense, but, like, they, like, really lock in defensively. Stevie Mitchell has taken a step this second half of the year, scoring a little bit more. Kolek should be back. Cam Jones can really score. I mean, they are small, and that's why I guaranteed Providence is going to beat them, because they couldn't kill Providence on the glass. But the defense was very suffocating, and they have the shooting in scoring, and also with the stupid little push shots. I think that they can maybe break the Ishaka Smart curse.
Yeah, I just think if you're picking, right, like Florida's got all the size and good guard play, right? Colorado's got all this NBA talent and really should be, you know, a lot better than they are if they hadn't been injured throughout most of the year. Like, that's like a scary enough second round.
So are you selling Boise?
I mean, I think Boise's good. You know, I'm worried about Colorado. I will say, like, Colorado, I was not, like, crazy impressed because I played at the Pac-12 tournament. Like, yeah, they won the games that they needed to until Oregon, but, like, I wasn't like, wow, what a team. Like, I thought they – look, I think Lampkin's just not very good, and it causes a lot of problems for their team. And, you know, I think the lack of aggressiveness from Cody Williams – kind of bogs down their offense because they're just begging for like a second creator, right? Because you have KJ and then DeSilva kind of wants to shoot and like be, you know, take his spots. Then you have all these other guys that they're just role players, right? Javon Hadley's just like an energy, you know, active combo forward. Luke O'Brien's just out there to shoot, right? They have the Bangot Dak big guy who kind of subs in for he subs in for Lampkin. He's like a skinny, you know, run and jump type big. But they just don't have a lot of, like, creation. And so Cody just, like, kind of waiting around. Cody didn't score in double figures at all in that tournament. And so I'm concerned about that because he missed the four games prior. Like, how good is he? So I think Boise can beat him.
Well, it's kind of crazy because all those times I was watching Colorado, Cody Williams was out.
Yeah,
and they look great. And you're saying, and I watched them struggle against Oregon too, but because the games that I saw, I mean, going back to like early in conference play, where they had Julian Hammond in there who can really shoot, and then this end of year stuff where they had either O'Brien or Hadley, and like little Javon Ruffin, and it seems like putting Cody Williams. And it didn't help immediately, which is kind of, you know, the whole thing with the one and done freshman types, right? But Boise, yeah. I just think it's not that talented, and they're not that athletic at all.
I agree.
But they made it this far, so
yeah. I mean, then they won all these games, like
yeah.
So, all right.
Is that a way that all these Mountain West teams play like two bigs? And it's, like, not, like, two imposing bigs. It's, like, kind of, like, two power forwards.
Yeah, Colorado State plays, like, two bigs who can both space. Boise plays Stanley and...
Dagenhart.
Yeah. Nevada will play two bigs a good amount. New Mexico plays the two bigs. San Diego State plays two bigs a lot with Ladee. And then who's the last one? Utah State plays a little bit. They didn't want to. They wanted to play four out with then Osabor, but then Max Agbonpolo got hurt and missed the rest of the season, so they had to get a little bit more, a little bigger.
And then UNLV does too, right? With the Boons?
Yeah. Rest of this region, like, Duke feels like a sinking ship, right? I mean, players only meeting after losing to NC State, not ideal. Yeah, Kentucky here, right? That's a big brand, right? Like, does Kentucky defend well enough? Can Kentucky make the run? Like, I do think Kentucky gets to the Elite Eight. I would be very interested in a Kentucky-Houston game for the Final Four, right? Because stylistically very different. I think Jamal Shedd would have Reed Shepard or Rob Dillingham at hell.
I mean, Kentucky's offense is so explosive, though, which means that they're probably not even going to make it to the Sweet 16, right?
Yeah, because they don't defend. I will say elite content. Elite content.
If they lost to Oakland?
Oh, my God. Like, nothing has ever been more entertaining.
I'm thinking NC State might be able to beat Texas Tech. Is Warren Washington still hurt, or is he back?
I think he's out. Let me make sure of that. I will say, if Texas Tech plays Kentucky, they're the type of team that can beat Kentucky.
I mean, without Warren Washington, they like don't even have a big.
Warren Washington has not played. So.
They like dusted off Kyron Lindsey the other day, who I thought was redshirting.
I think Kyron Lindsey's like already gone.
Yeah.
He got dusted off in late February, and now has left the team. So their backup bigs are like Robert Jennings.
Who I remember in the preseason, I was like, I think he's the back of five. And you're like, he's a four. It's like, well, if not him, then who? It's funny. We said that about Steven Settle for Temple, too.
Yes.
And it turns out their five was basically that Sam Hoffman guy who they added late.
Yeah, the guy that averaged like six a game at Houston Baptist. They're like, yeah, that's how it'll work.
Like a 6'6", 230-pound center, I guess, who jacks threes. Could Wisconsin be a little vulnerable now they're playing better too in the Iowa Texas A&M mold? How real is James Madison?
I think James Madison's very real. I think James Madison and FAU are very comparable. Not to say that FAU, you know, obviously, you know, you run it 10 times, what happened only happens once. But like, I think JMU has like the similar qualities of like they're well coached. They're very deep. They have a star in Terrence Edwards. They have very good young players who can create offense in Xavion Brown and Jalen Carey, who's Vernon Carey Jr.'s brother and is like a monster post player. I do think everyone's just jumping to it. It's like, oh, yeah, James Madison's going to be Duke, like, you know, whatever, like. But I like JMU. I will say I thought Wisconsin did play very well this past weekend.
Like they did. They got great minutes out of Crowell, who was shooting the jumpers. Hepburn looked amazing.
That's what I was going to say, was Chucky was the real revelation. Like, I've never liked Chucky. That was the first I've ever been like, wow, Chucky's playing really well.
I've always liked Chucky.
You'll have an opportunity to like him a lot more in a couple of weeks when he goes in the transfer portal.
We'll see about that. He's got 1 year left. What if Wisconsin makes like a Sweet 16? I guess he could be the Ryan Nemhard of this year, maybe. I don't think Duke's at risk against Vermont, right? But I guess, I mean, they did lose to Georgia Tech, so.
Yeah, I don't think Vermont. I mean, the thing with Vermont is we've seen it so many times before, them not do it. And this is not one of the best Vermont teams. But I feel like Vermont's rarely blown out. Like, I know they lost 78-61 last year, but, like, they weren't, like, crushed. Like, they were in that game. You know, they're around. You know, a couple years before that, they played Arkansas at 4 points. 2021, they missed the tournament. They lost to Hartford. 2019, they played Florida State. They lost by 7, right? Like, they've been in a lot of these games, but they've never broken through. I'm just, I don't know. Like, what do you, like, I don't know how Vermont really, like, the one thing Vermont is very good defensively. Like, they're very solid. You're not going to beat them on the glass. You're not going to punk Vermont. Like, Vermont's going to be around. They have shooters. I guess I'm just kind of like, all right, like, what's the path to them winning the game? I don't really see it. But I could see them lose to Wisconsin. I could even see them lose to James Madison.
I don't think Houston. I don't think Texas can beat Houston, or not Houston. Duke can beat Houston.
I agree with that. I mean, Duke just doesn't have like any power at all.
Right.
It's all finesse. Yeah. I think for upsets in this region, I think I'm going James Madison, going NC State. And the rest pretty chalky. I mean, Florida's really good, but I feel like we're going to get some positive variance from Arizona, Marquette, Tennessee, you know, these cursed teams. Purdue even, right?
I have Houston to the Final Four from this region.
I went Marquette trying to will it into existence, but I do think that Houston would probably take him out.
All right, last region, we have the Purdue region, the Midwest. Other notable teams here, 2-seed Tennessee, 3-seed Creighton, 4-seed Kansas, 5-seed Gonzaga. This is going to be a very popular upset region of Gonzaga McNeese and Kansas Samford. I don't buy either. I don't know why anyone thinks Gonzaga is losing to McNeese.
I think so.
Why? McNeese is like big man, is like 6'7". EK's going to kill him. Mark Few is like a, you know, obviously a very good tournament coach. Nembhard's been playing great. Like, McNeese is not winning this game.
I'm not. I guess maybe because I didn't watch the Gonzaga Kentucky game. I think there's a Providence game at the same time. But, like watching them early in the year, they were kind of underwhelming. I guess EK's, like, dominating now.
He is, yeah. The other thing is, like, Gonzaga never turns it over. So if you're McNeese and your whole team is built on turning people over, like, I don't know how that's going to work.
I definitely don't see the Kansas-Samford thing, especially if Hunter Dickinson's playing, which we assume Dickinson and McCullough are going to play, right?
I sort of think that they're going to – I think it's almost more likely that they win, you know, Samford.
Do you think it's more likely that Samford wins if they play?
I think Samford wins. No, not if they play, just in general.
The Samford-Purdue opener is kind of eye-opening, right, for a team with a lot of size. And we have this whole notion that the faster you play and the more possessions you play, the more you're exposing the better team to come back and beat you.
No, I agree with that. I think the thing I would say with Samford is because it's such a disruptive style and it just changes how the game is played, you could get more of like a fluky result. Right? Like, it's not about the pace to me with Samford. It's the fact that, like, you're just going to get a lot of weird disjointed possessions and Kansas isn't going to be able to, like, use its advantages. Like, how are you going to post the ball to Hunter Dickinson when, like, you know, most of the buckets Kansas scores are big transition.
That's fair.
I'm with you, but I'm picking it. But I do think it's a little more likely than Gonzaga. Doster on Philly State with me the other night said that, you know, they're more talented. Said that McNeese was more talented than Gonzaga. I'm like, no. When did McNeese get Nembhard and Ike? And Nolan Hay, Are we really deluding ourselves in the thing that, like, Nolan Hickman wouldn't average 20 points a game in the Southland?
Jahada Wells was like a bench guy for TCU.
Yeah, like, I like Jahada Wells, but what are we doing? Do we think that Tennessee is in good shape here? Or are we worried
about that? Yes, I don't buy Virginia or Colorado State. I mean, Colorado State, for the sake of the Mountain West, that's tomorrow, right?
Yes.
They need that one. Just put Virginia away. Virginia's been so bad. They're starting Tane Murray now, I think. From, you know, never playing the whole year, basically. Now he's starting. Texas, I guess, could give Tennessee problems. But they're both big and athletic, and Tennessee has more talent. And I guess not by much, but I think Tennessee's the better team, and they play similar styles.
Yeah, Dessou is the guy that scares me for Tennessee. Because he could pull you away from the rim.
That's fair. And then, I mean, South Carolina, Oregon might have the least juice of any first, you know, those kind of similarly seeded first round games. I guess maybe Drake and Washington State as well, but I mean, Oregon looked great. They have a great guard, Shelstad. Dante's playing amazing. South Carolina's metrics were always dragging, so maybe I'll go Oregon here.
I think I picked Oregon, yeah. I'm buying Purdue. I mean, I have Purdue winning the championship. So, and again, I don't know if you know how, like, smart that is. That's just, like, I've been there the whole year, right? I'm not backing down now. Like, I'll go down with the ship.
Do you think that Creighton could give Purdue problems?
I mean, I think probably, yeah. I mean, I think Tennessee could give Purdue problems.
Did Purdue and Tennessee play already this year?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. I mean, Creighton and Purdue are kind of similar in the sense that they don't have, like, the elite athletes to disrupt you. I think that's why Providence did so well against Creighton this year. Is that, you know, like, Stevie Mitchell could, like, try to take Devin Carter out of the game. Stephon Castle could. But Creighton doesn't have that guy. I guess for Purdue, that's Lance Jones, but he's, like, not a great athlete. I don't know if Lance Jones or Ethan Morton or any of those guys could take Shireman out of the game. Or Trey Alexander out of the game. So
I'm with you.
But, I mean, Purdue's great. I watched the Jordan Sperber video on them today. Post up Edie in the middle of the floor. Kalkbrenner never fouls. So, you know, what's it? Unstoppable force versus a movable object. We'll see what gives if that game materializes.
Look, I think the cool thing about this tournament, just before we wrap it up on the bracket itself, is that there's just a ton of, like, interesting potential storylines, right? Like, Carolina in the Final Four would be compelling. Arizona in the Final Four in their home state would be very compelling. You know, UConn trying to repeat would be compelling. Purdue, you know, Tennessee trying to get the monkey off the back, right? Like, there's a good half dozen to a dozen teams where it's like, all right, if they make the Final Four, it's a huge story. It's very cool.
I totally agree. I think I'm just going UConn. I was thinking Arizona. I was thinking Houston. I was thinking maybe, I mean, Creighton and Marquette are high in the metrics. But UConn just has that next gear. They have a ton of experience. They can play different ways. They shoot the cover off the ball. They have three elite shooters. So, I mean, Klingon's a matchup nightmare on the defensive end. I think I'm just going to stick with UConn.
Fair enough. Do you want to get to the carousel?
Yeah. Ohio State made the worst hire in recent memory. Worse than Ben Johnson to Minnesota, because at least, like, Minnesota's a lower tier Big Ten job where you really had to question the level of candidate they could get. Ohio State just paid, what, an eight-figure buyout?
Correct.
To hire the guy sitting right next to the head coach, because he coached seven games. It's like maybe the worst hire of the modern college basketball era.
So I think it's really the three option. Well, there's four options, right? There's Kenny Payne, but that's hindsight driven, right? That was
that was bad at the time.
Right. So it was bad because it was hire with no experience, but theoretically he should at least be able to get elite talent. turned out he was.
It was the same thing with Stubblefield, right? Where it's like, okay, you can get elite talent at Oregon, but you're coaching DePaul.
But Louisville is not DePaul.
That is true.
So I was willing to forgive the Stubblefield. You know, the Stubblefield thing was dumb thinking. The Kenny hire was at least, all right, they're going to get players, and they may not win as much with the players, but we'll see what happens. They never got the players, never had the time to do whatever. Then there's the Ben Johnson hire, which is like, this guy is clearly just like not that level of candidate, right? Like, we're hiring him because he's tied to the state of Minnesota, which at least Ben Johnson was like very clearly on the head coaching radar, right? A lot of people were saying, oh, Ben Johnson could get X, Ben Johnson could get it. And then it's like, oh, all of a sudden you got Minnesota.
It was Northern Illinois.
Yes.
They're like, yeah, I don't think so. And then Minnesota's like, all right, sold.
So then there's Rodney Terry, where Rodney Terry, I think in some ways is worse than Diebler because we have a track record of him being a terrible, no, or not a terrible, but like a bad college coach, college head coach. But the hand was much more forced, right? If Jake Diebler had even made the tournament, right? If they were in the tournament and Ohio State hired him, like, all right, well, you know, they must have just gotten forced to do it. Whatever, like, they clearly were not, I mean, like, I know that they, you know, one booster really likes him, like, whatever the guy's name, Schottenstein. He really likes him. You know, he's obviously got, you know, former players in his corner. He has, you know, family, you know, family ties to the school, whatever. But like, I mean, it's, I find it like borderline depressing that Jake Diebler got this job. And look, this is no disrespect to Jake Diebler. He did a nice job. But like, I sit up there and I'm like if I'm Darren DeVries, like I wake up this morning, I'm Darren DeVries. I'm like angry at the world. Like, I know life's not fair, whatever, but like Darren DeVries worked for 20 years as an assistant, got a break, got to be a head coach, and did like a phenomenal job. Like Darren DeVries walks into Drake, a place that hasn't won a ton, and he wins 20 games in 6 straight years. He goes to the tournament 3 times. He wins 28 games 2 consecutive years at Drake. And Darren DeVries, in the end, doesn't really even get like a chance at Ohio State. He had like, I think he had like one conversation. Like because Jake Diebler went 6-2 and his last name is Diebler. Also, like what are we doing? Like is the last name Diebler? Like it's not royalty. Like whatever. Like he's a regular player. Like what in God's name are we doing? And again, maybe, and the worst part, like maybe Jake Diebler will win because it's Ohio State. It's a hard place to screw it up. He's gonna have resources. He's gonna be able to get players. Like
Holtman won and screwed it up at the, you know, simultaneously.
Right. Yes. Like again, it just drives me nuts. Like think about all the guys in college basketball who spent their entire careers working for this opportunity, and it gets to go to Jake Diebler, who people talk about. Okay, he got fired. They got fired at Ohio State, and you know what a great coaching job. You know, whatever. Like, people do realize he was part of the 0-18 Vanderbilt staff before that. And people are like, well, that was unfair. Well, wonder what they did the year before. And it's not to say, like, I think Bryce Drew sucks, whatever. People do, like, need to realize, though, that the year before Bryce Drew went 0-18, he went 12-20 went 6-12 in the league. Like, not this, like, there was no, like, oh, man, you know, Bryce Drew's killing it. Just a matter of time. Like, it was a prove-it year. And they stunk. And obviously, Darius Garland, whatever, like, yes, he got hurt, but, like, were they magic? I mean, people again, seem to forget. They lost to Kent State with Darius Garland. Got hurt 2 minutes in the game. But that team still had Saban Lee, who was a draft pick. Aaron Nesmith, who was a draft pick. Matt Ryan, who wound up playing in the NBA. Simi Shittu. They lost to Kent State. They lost, you know, badly to a lot of these teams. I mean, like, what? Like, what in the world? So, look, I wish no ill will towards Jake Diebler. I hope he does a good job. I hope he wins a lot of games. I hope Ohio State's happy. But this is a just dreadful hire.
I mean,
It's an F.
Absolutely an F. And Ben Johnson was an F. Kenny Payne was an F. Tony Stubblefield was an F. Rodney Terry, I probably called it an F given my stance on these things. But, like, he's not even comparable to Jake Diebler. He had so many years of previous head coaching experience where they were mediocre. Like, they weren't bad. He was a mediocre mid-major coach, Ronnie Terry, who got handed the reins for pretty much an entire season. I think maybe he missed the first month. But objectively, like, landed the plane, both in the regular season and in the tournament, made the Elite Eight. Like, that's not even comparable to a dude who was never been a head coach, was an assistant on the staff that got fired, and coached seven games, or eight games, whatever the number was.
Yeah, and again, they lost to Minnesota. Like, what are we doing?
And now, someone put the contract on Twitter. It's $2.5 million is his salary. So it's obviously very low.
Yes.
But like, maybe don't pay the $14 million to Chris Holtman. Just let him keep going then at that point.
Right. Theoretically, you know, if they need to get out of this in 2 years, they probably can. But, I mean, my God, what a stupid idea. Seriously. I mean, awful. Other carousel news. Michigan parts ways with Juwan Howard. I think this is probably the only, like, real surprise. That and Vanderbilt were both kind of seen as 50-50. Vandy, because they had, you know, a huge buyout to pay, somewhere between $15 and $25 million, I believe, to get rid of Jerry Stackhouse. And then Juwan, because he's a legend and people weren't sure that Michigan was ready to make the move. I think both moves are the right move. Michigan will be an interesting hire in that, I mean, number one, Dusty May not going to Ohio State has some interesting dominoes here. Like, I think there's a good chance Dusty just wants to be the head coach of Louisville. But, like, if he doesn't, like, all of a sudden maybe he gets Michigan. And that takes away a job for, like, a Nico Medved or a job for, like, a lot of these different guys. DeVries. I think DeVries will be in at West Virginia. I think DeVries will be in at Oklahoma State. But, like, you know, Byington could get West Virginia. I still think, like, Chris Jans could maybe get West Virginia. So...
he's a great coach, Chris Jans.
I agree.
It's all about the narratives. You know, when the Michigan job opened, that was when I really felt like they should just wait till next year and get, you know, a fresh crop of candidate. Because I was thinking, I was like, we're going to run out of high-level openings for next year. But then I went through it, and, you know, we'll be fine, right? We got Villanova. I guess we don't have NC State anymore because he got a two-year extension. And then winning the league. Ohio State could open, I guess. I made a list of, like, 10 or so.
Indiana, for sure.
Indiana, Arizona State, maybe Central Florida. We'll see. There are good ones that could still open. There's been a bunch of, oh, how about Josh Schertz is going to get St. Louis, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, a great hire for St. Louis. It'd be interesting to see how many of these players follow/what NIL situation St. Louis has to be able to pay all those guys. You know, they will be hot commodities. It is kind of an interesting kind of twist of fate of how things go, right? If there's no bid stealers and Josh Schertz makes the tournament, Indiana State is, you know, I think a minimum, if they make the tournament, Josh Schertz is going to get, you know, West Virginia, or he's going to get, he's going to get one of those jobs. West Virginia, maybe he could get Vanderbilt. If they win a tournament game, he might get Michigan. Heck, if he was to Sweet 16, like, I still think there's a good chance he would have been the head coach at Louisville. So St. Louis kind of gets him. How long they'll have him for, I don't know. I mean, now he's the hot name. We'll see how effective the style is moving up a level. He's a very good coach. I do expect him to win. I don't know how, like, what scale he'll win at, but assuming he doesn't end up taking the job, I do think he'll be in there.
I mean, we're still waiting on some of the bigger names too. I guess that'll be after they're formally eliminated from the tournament, except for Danny Sprinkle, who by all accounts is already taking Washington. I'm really interested in seeing the kind of second level carousel with the Mountain West schools. You know, like, if Nico gets picked off, or if Richard Pitino leaves, right, or anything.
It would be internal.
It's boring.
Well, March Madness legend Ali Faropanesh gets the job then. That doesn't entice you, though, does it?
I remember that game, Northern Iowa versus Kansas. More swims, right?
Yeah. I think Utah State will be a sitting head coach.
They got to after the run that they've been on.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, though, like, regionally, other than, like, Eric Henderson at South Dakota State, there's not a lot of guys. It's like, you wonder if, like, one of these names, like a Preston Spradlin or a Jared Calhoun, although I think Spradlin's pretty deep in there at Southern Illinois. You wonder if, like, a Calhoun could get, like, a Utah State or a Fresno.
Darren DeVries is going to be too hot. He's just stay at Drake if you don't get the other.
Yeah, he wouldn't take it.
Well, how about Porter Mosier made a big miscalculation not going to DePaul, I think. If they're bad next year, they're going to can him, right?
I don't know.
Can't believe I just said he made a mistake by not going to DePaul, which I guess, I mean, they get Chris Holtman, which they did better than Ohio State and their head coach.
They did, theoretically.
And I mean, he's going to fail at DePaul. DePaul has no hope.
I'm not convinced of that. I mean, I'm not convinced it's a great hire, to be honest, but it's an experienced hire. I'm not convinced, why are we so sure Holtman will win it? He did a bad job the last years, and now he's had, no time.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll believe DePaul has NIL when I see it. Right, all these talks of $2 million. This,
I was told they've got the $2 million.
This is my issue with all these. You know, it's the same with the Virginia NIL rumors before and the Georgetown ones. It's NIL is so important. Clearly, if you can get it now or after a coaching change, same with the Oklahoma State stuff. If you can get it now, why couldn't you get it before?
I don't think people understand. One, I think it's an infrastructure thing of you have to build up the resources. You have to build up the fundraisers and whatever to do it. I think the other thing, too, is that you need an athletic department that's serious about it. Right? It's not like Seton Hall doesn't have major donors, right? Seton Hall has donors who are building the practice facility and whatever. They're not doing it because, But, the AD was, a little bit shaky on NIL. How big of a deal is this? Whatever.
But that implies that you can just rev it up, right? Because it's always instead of firing Mike Boynton, we're just going to give him more NIL. Well, just give it to him in the first place. Why are we holding it back? Oh, Tony Bennett's not all in on NIL, but the donors are ready to donate. Well, then just donate. What are we doing? Get better players.
It is bizarre.
Or nothing will beat the Georgetown theory from last year is that we had $1 million lined up for Hunter Dickinson and $0 lined up for any contingency plan. Were we born yesterday? What's going on?
Anything else carousel related?
No, I've moved on to portal stuff.
I don't think a lot of these portal names have been at all surprising. Maybe it's just because I'm relatively plugged in. But, it's a lot of grad transfers from mid-major schools who are obviously going to move. And then,
how do you differentiate between all the there's 1,000 guys who all average 15 points, 3 rebounds, and 4 assists for their mid-major team?
you have to be able to actually evaluate talent, right? How about this? In high school, there's dozens of kids who average 30 points a game in high school. How do you separate them? You watch tape and you go to high school events and you see who's the best players.
I'm not talking about the staffs. I'm talking about me.
Oh, you, yeah.
And for who I want Providence to go after. Because we need this combo guard.
These lists have gone berserk. Dakota LaFleur is like a Providence level player at best. Like Dakota LaFleur is like an A10. He's like a high mid plus high minus. It's like Gonzaga. You know, everybody's offering him or calling him, right? Calling and offering is very different.
For center, I'm leaning Josh Cohen right now. He might be a little too slight, though.
He's not slight.
No? I say he looks slighter than Oduro and some of our past centers.
He's probably slighter than Oduro, but he is like a very skilled post-up guy.
Yeah, they said he was 95th percentile in post-up scoring.
Oh, you're watching those transfer portal videos.
Not all of them, because there's so many of them. But
they're back.
Right.
No, Josh Cohen would be a great fit for Providence.
Playing next to Hop in the front court and Oswin, and
he'd be a great he'd be a very good fit.
And then trying to find like some like more sleepers, like this Jason Torres Rivera guy for Vanderbilt. Like, he looks the part, but his shooting numbers are atrocious. I think he's supposed to be a shooter. He's kind of like Jared Culvery from the highlight videos. But you figure like he averaged 6 points a game as a freshman, even on a bad team. You figure as a sophomore, he's like a 10 point per game guy. So, but I'm still searching.
Just can't wait to see where Georgetown spends its $5 million.
I saw that they're kicking the tires on Cameron Hunter, former Butler commit. I forgot all about that.
That's a terrible idea.
Syracuse, all of their role players have jumped in the portal, it seems like.
I think I said this to my brother. He texted me in like, you know, the summer, or not in the summer, in like January. He was like, oh, you know, I really like Quiddier Copeland. Like, I think this guy's good. He needs to stay at Syracuse. He needs to be a starter next year. I think, no. Guys like Quiddier Copeland are the people, like, keeping the portal economy alive.
That's right. Well, I mean, he would not have been a starter next year. That's the issue.
Right, yeah. He's always going to be kind of blocked. Like Quiddier Copeland's like, all right, I can think of a dozen teams that could use, like, a big combo who could score.
He doesn't shoot, though. That's the issue, but... No, yeah. He's a high major player, certainly. Justin Taylor, I'm not so sure about.
I think Justin Taylor is like a high minus.
I mean, I saw he's from Virginia. Like, why not go to like George Mason or something?
Yeah, that's probably right. I mean, he's also one of those guys. He's supposed to be a shooter, but he shot 30% from three.
His mechanics were awful, but then he's also playing the four for Syracuse, yeah. Which is kind of weird.
Who else? And see, Benny Williams is in the portal because he got booted.
Oh, Derek Simpson for Rutgers is smaller than Quiddier Copeland, less athletic, but similar style, right?
Yeah, combo, never really put it together. He's the only guy, like, he probably winds up staying high major, but, like, he probably shouldn't, right? Like Derek Simpson should be going to, like, the A-10.
Well, like, it depends what you want, right? And with some of these teams that fire your coaches, you might turn over the whole roster. And then Derek Simpson is, you know, suddenly.
Right, but if Derek Simpson on a Rutgers team that was, like, awful, right, like, could not score the basketball to save their life, had no guard play, if he can't break through and have a good year, then, like, he's screwed, you know?
Yeah.
So if he's, like, I'd rather him go to UMass and be, you know, 14 points a game, and then worst case, he's Josh Cohen 2.0, and he moves up again.
Any thoughts on a landing spot for Garway?
Oh, you already put him in the portal, eh?
Trilly was talking about it again today.
I mean, I would not refute any reporting about Garway Dual being in the portal. Let's put it that way.
Could he be the next Wake Forest or Santa Clara reclamation project? Again,
right? Like, there's a lot of guys like Garway who kind of need the ball and haven't really proven it, right? Like, you know, I think Freddie DeLeon's probably a safer bet. But like, if I'm Freddy DeLeon, I'm probably good enough to stay to have stayed at Tennessee. But is Tennessee gonna put a ball on my hands? No, so I have to transfer. All right, that's fine. I'll transfer. But like, how many teams, you know, they're gonna take one high-priced guard, right? You're taking one high-priced guard. Are you taking the kid who averaged 2 points a game?
Nope.
So it becomes like an interesting kind of value prop, right? So you either go somewhere where you're gonna have to compete and take maybe less money and like, you know, get pushed, you know, or you go to like a smaller program and like get promised a lot. But like, that's a big like calculus. Like think about it. Like, let's say Santa Clara has the NIL. Santa Clara can pay $200,000 for Garway. So they pay $200,000 for Garway. What if Garway is just bad, right? Like,
he was not good this year.
Right. It's great that like Adama Ball turned out all right and like Pods turned out all right.
Yeah, he was. Sorry, go on.
I just said it was risky. Sorry, but
yeah, for someone like Freddy DeLeon, I mean, he's coming off a great team. You figure he would sacrifice a little money for playing time and role. But then, even like a team like he would have to go to like Seton Hall or, you know, maybe even lower, right? To be able to start right away.
I think Frey could go to, I think he could go to Wake. I know he decommitted from Wake. I don't know what the relationship is there anymore. But that'd be a great fit, right? It's basically Salas 2.0. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting portal guys out there already. A few more rumored by Trilly and people like that. Oh, Doug McDaniel hit the portal officially as well.
Yeah, that was one of the least surprising moves of all time.
Georgetown or Maryland? Sure, the list will be a lot longer than that. But.
Yeah, I think he'll be in the DMV. The thing is, like, someone like, you know, so we were talking about Virginia. And I don't want to do portal fit after portal fix. You know, there's a million things to get through, and like, we could probably wrap it up after this. But like, doesn't a team like Virginia kind of need to do what Wisconsin did with AJ Storr and be like, all right, like, let's plug our nose and like, let's find a kid who is, you know, maybe he's like a more of a problem than we're used to, but like, is still like a good kid, right? Like, AJ Storr's not a bad kid. He's just like, you know, he had bad habits, and like, you need to get him like locked in a little bit more. Maybe at a unrealistic expectations or unrealistic people around them, right? Like, that works, right? If you're AJ Storr, you can do that. I don't know that you can do that with Doug or with Virginia, right? Can you do that? Like if you're Virginia, right, could you go recruit Doug McDaniel or Judah Mintz? It's like, hey, like, we are bad because we can't score. Please fix that for us.
You probably could with a guard. I don't know if they could with, like, trying to think of a big that's kind of mercurial like that, or it doesn't play defense all the time. But
yeah, like, I don't know. I just feel like Virginia needs to shake up.
They definitely do. Well, the fact that they made the tournament means they're probably not going to shake it up. But I guess we'll see what happens tomorrow, because that game could be very ugly.
It's going to be real low scoring.
And, I mean, if Colorado State's hitting shots, they could run Virginia out of the gym.
It's true, but it's going to be hard. I mean, they haven't made shots for a while. So. Anything else?
Oh, just the NIT changing his rules was like a godsend. Like, if they didn't change the rules, I would be watching Central Connecticut State at Providence last night. Tomorrow night.
Why is that such a big issue?
Why would I want to watch that game?
I mean, with no Devin Carter, Providence would be lucky to win.
They're going to be lucky to beat Boston College. No Barron either. He has an injury.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you find Central United State, you'd win the game. You're probably going to lose to Boston College.
Well, I think that's kind of the idea. They want this over with, I think. But who knows? Maybe Donovan Santoro finally getting his time to shine. Played like 20 minutes the whole season.
It'll be interesting. Look, I do think, I will say people like, people viewed it as like a binary where it was like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have given the automatic bids to, we shouldn't have given the automatic bids to the mid-majors or to the high majors over the mid-majors because, you know, the high majors don't want to play. So now we screwed up the tournament. But like, if you look at the bracket, it's still like better than it usually.
Yeah, seven teams turned it down. It's not clear if all seven would have even made it. Like Ole Miss and Syracuse and Indiana. Like I don't know if they would have all made it, but I guess it depends what they were picking off of. But yeah, I have very little enthusiasm for the NIT. I'm going to watch it obviously because Robinson's in it, but kind of hope this is a quick one. We can get back to Portland. But anyway.
All right, folks. Well, we'll be back after the first weekend of the tournament. Should be fun. Appreciate y'all joining us. See you next week.